Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome again to Sufi Pilgrim's Progress podcast. Today, because of a number of questions I've had and concerns, we'll be talking about the basics of Sufism. Now, there's a lot of confusion as to what Sufism actually is and what it's not, and I hope we'll be able to clarify for some people what it means to be practicing Sufism. Okay, let me start with the first teaching I ever received in Islamic Sufism. I was in Jerusalem on the Mount of Olives with a sheikh who was little known in the West at the time, and he presented us a book of translations of some of the teachings he was giving. And this book said the following. This is something that has followed me now for 41 years this autumn as a reference marker, something they say in Arabic that's thabit, solid and has never moved during all these 40 years. And it says the following: on this way we walk on two legs, the leg of Sharia and the leg of Hakika. Okay, Sharia here refers to Islamic law, but it also refers to the whole world of relativity, of our relationship to Allah as someone other than us, and we being his servant, trying to be obedient and appropriate to Allah's will. This is Sharia. Okay. Hakika is something else. Most Muslims have really no idea, except a very theoretical one, of what Hakika is. Hakika refers to the absolute reality. And more specifically in Sufism, it refers to joining, to being united with this absolute reality as one, in which case the individual self effaces. Okay, now, a lot of Muslims talk about Tawheed, for example, which is oneness, but this remains a theological concept, an article of Aqidah, but not an actual experiential reality. Now, if you want to understand Hakika, actually this may sound odd, but if you really want to understand the essence of Hakika, I would suggest you go onto the internet and look for people who are teaching Advaita Vedanta or non-duality, and you'll get some idea. Now, in the last video, I was criticizing these people, and the criticism is completely justified, but they do have some aspect of the truth that most Muslims, the vast majority of Muslims, including those who call themselves Sufis, are often missing, because they don't realize that the Hakika is actually a reality that you can experience, not just one you believe in, not just one you're told by your sheikh exists, but one that you can actually experience. Now, alhamdulillah, my last Sufi sheikh, who was Abu Qasim Bilkhairi from Tunisia, you could tell he had realized this state. And he would do something. He has problems now with his knees, so I don't think he could do it, but he would sit down in something they called istighraq, which means he was drowned in the reality of the oneness. And you could see it and you could feel it in him. Unfortunately, many of his murids who claimed they were there weren't really, because when you questioned them or you watched their behavior, it didn't add up. So there's a lot of confusion about this point. But in any case, just remember the basic principle: two legs, Sharia, which is what most of the ulama are teaching and what I call the pseudo-Sufis are teaching. And when I say pseudo-Sufis, it's because they talk about Sufism theoretically, but not experientially. And a lot of people think they're Sufis because they understand the philosophy of Sufism, but they don't really understand the experience. So these are the pseudo-Sufis, okay? And they know a lot about Sharia, and they amp it up and make it, try to make it as spiritual as they can. But you can tell if you listen carefully that they're missing the essential experience, okay? Sharia and Hakika, The non-dualists have the hakika down, but they don't understand the importance of Sharia or the relative world. So they're deficient in a serious way in that sense. Okay, that's point number one. Point number two is, what are the Sufis really aiming at? The Sufis are aiming at, we'll ask one of our students here if he can fill in the blank. Yes, okay. But fana is a means to? Marifat. Okay. The Sufis are looking for marifat. Now, marifat is, as many words in Arabic, it can have a number of different meanings depending on how you want to understand it. But the marifat we're talking about is in three parts. Okay. The most important part is knowing Allah experientially from the inside. This is fana. Realizing divine consciousness, the mind of Allah, if you want, the consciousness of Allah within your being as you. Okay, that's the most important part of marifat, and that's related to fana, because your ego has to be annihilated, your nafs has to disappear in order for Allah to be fully present within you. The second part of marifat is knowing Allah experientially outside of you. You can't do this in this world. This can only be done either in the akhirah or in the ghaib or whatever way. If you want good examples of this form of marifat, I suggest you read about the NDE experiences, near-death experiences. Many of these people have seen God clearly on the other side as someone independent of them, but of course in a relationship of love and compassion and all the rest of it, that and knowledge that Allah has about his creation. So this is number two aspect. Number three aspect, I just learned about that this in the last few years. I think it was Sheikh Nu actually who said the following about this kind of marifat is knowing what Allah is getting at, why Allah is creating the different events around you in your life and in the life of others. Knowing what Allah is getting at in the world. Nothing happens by accident. Everything is predestined and everything that occurs is meaningful. Getting a sense of why this might be is another form of marifat and a subtle one. For example, I'll give you an example of what marifat isn't. So when there was the tsunami, about 10 years ago now, there was maybe a little less, a huge tsunami in Indonesia and Sri Lanka specifically, there was an Islamic scholar, astaghfirullah, who got up on TV and said, this has nothing to do with God, this is a geological event, not a theological event. I listened to this and I said, like we say in Islam, wala hawla wala, this guy understands nothing. There is a meaning in these events, even if they're catastrophic. They're not just geological events, that's materialistic science that says it like that. So that's the opposite of marifat. But there's sometimes where we see things happening around and we say, just so I respect people's anonymity. Recently, I ran into a couple of young people and I noticed that the man in this couple was really problematic, probably psychopathic. And at first I wanted to warn the parents about this partner and I kind of did. And then I said to myself, this is what this young lady needs, this young man, even though he's a nasty one, to learn some lessons. Okay. This too, i.e., is from the wisdom of Allah, these difficulties. And this applies not only to that situation, but to all situations in general, that when something, what seems wrong, happens to us, it's actually right. Okay. So one of the great Sufis of the contemporary epoch was Sheikh Hashimi from originally, I think maybe originally from Morocco, But he ended up, or Algeria, that's right. And he ended up in Syria. And one of his servants was talking about him when someone asked him, "You spent 40 years as the servant of Sheikh Hashimi, what do you learn?" And he said, "I learned one thing." "How could you only learn one thing?" "I learned one thing, but it was very important." "What did you learn?" "I learned, fi kulli shay khair. In everything, there is good. So even in what is apparently bad, there is good." And the people of Marifat understand that. The people of Sharia do not understand that because they see bad and good all the time, but they don't realize that even in the bad is good. We talked about this in positive psychology. Number three point about Sufism is to be a real Sufi, you have to have himma. Okay. It has to be a sincere desire. Not only does it have to be a sincere desire, it has to be your highest priority. Okay, I've been traveling this Sufi path for 43 years, so I've seen a lot of things. And most of what I see is what I call spiritual entertainment. People just go to feel good around the Sufis. They do dhikr, they do song, they do dance. They feel the barakat of the sheikh or of the group, and they're happy and they go home and they lead their lives as before. Okay, so this is not... This is not the kind of himma we are interested in. This is not the kind of himma that the real Sufi should have. The Sufi has to have a himma to realize the deepest, highest levels of truth. Now, there are all kinds of other things going on in Sufi groups. I mentioned spiritual entertainment. I've seen this in many groups. They love to socialize, so the Sufi group becomes their center of socialization. Some of them like to brag about how great their sheikh is, so the Sufi group becomes a support for their narcissism. Some people want the psychological support of the sheikh because sheikh will encourage them and so they'll feel better, so they use the sheikh as a substitute father or mother. So there are all kinds of things going on in Sufi groups that are not Sufism. Okay, and these we have to try to understand, be aware of, because we won't get anywhere. If we're in any way contaminated by these things, we won't get anywhere. Now, some people start off, and I've seen this too, well in Sufism, and they have a lot of himma, and they get going, and they get hooked into a sheikh, and then the whole tariqat, for some reason or other, and there's all kinds of reasons, we can talk about it another time, but the tariqat kind of breaks down. It stops being a real tariqat. Usually there's some form of corruption there. And so the person who is traveling doesn't want to recognize this corruption, instead continues and just stagnates. And I've seen people 15, 20, 30 years just doing their Sufi practices out of habit, but not really out of himma, not really out of desire anymore to attain the truth, and not really progressing in any way, but this has become their habit. You see this sometimes, people, I think one of the tariqats in India that calls himself Jilani, and you see people say, "Oh yeah, I'm from the family, the Jilani family," and you know, it's just all a cultural artifact. It's no longer the real Sufism. So, briefly, what are we saying here? That in order to be a Sufi, you have to be focused on the highest level of truth. You need to give a lot of effort. It has to be a serious priority. Before all the other priorities, and that we have all kinds of priorities in our life. Now, I'm not saying people don't have to pursue a career, find a way of earning a living, taking care of their children, taking care of their wife, being respectful. All of these are necessary. But to be a real Sufi, the Sufism has to be the highest priority. I remember Sheikh Nazim speaking. Now, there's... there's all kinds of, another Islamic concept is relevant here, which is shirk. There is all kinds of shirk in the Muslim community now and in the Sufi community also. And shirk is no longer, as we said just before, worshipping wooden idols. Shirk takes many forms. One of the greatest shirk I find in the local Montreal community is getting your children into medical school. You know? if you get them into medical school, you've guaranteed them happiness and paradise and success in this world and the hereafter. They don't say it that way, but that's what they mean. So when the Pakistani people would ask me to come talk to them, I would say to them something like the following: if you think the key to happiness is for your kids to go to medical school, come with me to my continuing medical education at McGill. On Thursday evenings, it used to be. I used to go regularly. And I want you to see the doctors after 20, 30 years, what a state they're in. Most of them are in states of total burnout, depression, anxiety. If this is what you want for your children, then okay. Well, after I finished the talk, especially the mothers would come running up to me and say each time, Dr. Ibrahim, don't say that. Why not? He said, because you'll discourage my children. No, I'll discourage you. If your child has a vocation for medicine, that's a different thing. But if your child is going into medicine either to please his parents or to increase his social status or to make more money, he's going to make a lousy doctor. And for sure he won't make any spiritual progress. But I saw a sincere murid coming up to Sheikh Nazim one time, telling him he wanted to go to medical school, but he wanted to be a Sufi also. The Sheikh said, you can do this, but remember, Sufism, and I can attest this, takes a lot of energy. And he was essentially telling him, as long as you're in medical school, you're not going to make any progress until when you get out of it, you can make choices. You can make choices. Most of the people don't. Most of the medical students I know become overworked, workaholic doctors after medical school, because that's what they learn to do in medical school. So they never make the choice of saying, I'm going to work 3 days a week and give 4 days to the dean. Okay, I'm not trying to brag, but that's more or less what I always did. I never worked, after I finished medical school and they burnt me out enough, I never worked more than 3 to 4 days a week. Because I knew there were other things to be done. And as a doctor, you can earn more than you need in 3-4 days, you know. But 99% of my colleagues are still workaholics. Many of them even into their 70s and 80s. So this is one of the forms of shirk. I remember one of the friends of my daughter, who will go unnamed, but her father was totally dedicated to her being a medical student. And so, like, he would give her dispensations for anything. She didn't have to do Ramadan. She didn't have to go to Juma. Nothing was important except for getting into and succeeding at medical school. Okay, so this is one of the common modern-day shirks. We can go into many others. Why is it a shirk? Because all your priority has become that. Or building up your retirement portfolio. You know, this is another one. Financial planning has been as if. How many people have had the perfect financial plan and then end up in states? I've seen this as a doctor over and over again, of strokes and depressions and who knows what, as old age comes and they can't benefit at all. So this is another form of shirk, retirement planning. There's so many different forms in the modern world that take us away from Allah. So the Sufi is the person who remains focused on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, on realizing his nature, his own nature, and the nature of Allah experientially, and puts in the effort and prioritizes this. And whenever he slips, because we all slip and gets off the path, he catches himself one way or another and comes back onto it. May Allah help us. For those of us who are called to it. Now, another point here is not everyone is called to the mystical way. In fact, I think it's a minority of people. But for those who are called to this way, we ask that Allah keep us on the path, keep us both on the straight path and on the clear path, on the hidden path, so we can be in touch with his essence and his commands and his wishes and his light and his knowledge and his energy in all our affairs. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun wa salamun ala al mursalin walhamdulillahi rabbil alamin.